Right, intro music cue. Do 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 do. Webinars unfiltered. Do. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Webinars Unfiltered. And today's episode is Nobody Wants Another Meeting. And I feel this is something we're all very familiar with already, where need to share an update, schedule a meeting, need some feedback, schedule a meeting, need to align on something, definitely schedule a meeting. So it can sometimes feel that every workplace problem gets solved the exact same way. And today we are not saying that meetings are all bad. They absolutely have their place. But today we are asking whether they come as more of a default response to every communication challenge, and whether there are some times where a different approach might actually work better. So to help me with this discussion today, we are joined by Logan. So hi, Logan, and welcome to a Webinars Unfiltered podcast.
Hello, everyone. I am over the moon to be here.
And just for those watching, what is your kind of role within Workcast? Just so we know a bit more about you.
Sure. I am one of the software engineers at Workcast. I think I've been here for between two, 3 years, I think.
I feel like I should know that. I was like, whoa.
Well, do you know what? It's honestly flown by. But yeah, my main sort of responsibilities are sort of just working on, you know, the Workcast platform and implementing new features, maintenance, bug fixes, all that fun stuff.
All the exciting updates come from you.
Depending on who you are, yeah.
Perfect. So we'll just dive straight into the discussion today. And let's start with something that I feel everyone can relate to. And first question to you is, how many meetings do you feel are too many?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I feel like it's very broad, and depending on who you ask, you know, it's very subjective. For someone like myself, who, as an engineer, we sort of thrive on having like that focus sort of work time, and being taken out of that can be quite detrimental. So for me, honestly, I think like one or two sort of like daily meetings is like, can be acceptable. I think when I'm getting to that sort of over three mark daily is when I would really start to feel the fatigue for sure.
Yeah. Amazing. And I would probably agree with you as well. I think on average, I'm more meeting heavy on a Monday for sure. Like, I feel like Monday's the start of the week and everyone's like, you know, we've got the scrum, for example.
Exactly.
Then I have like a weekly start off call with my manager, Rachel. So I feel like the Monday is the more heavy day. And I feel I have a maximum of about three. Which I'm like, okay, that's enough. Like, anything more than that, I would be the same. Like, it's just, how are you supposed to get your work done around them? It's a bit difficult, isn't it?
100%.
And your role is fully remote. Has it been fully remote since you started Workcast? Sorry, I can't remember that.
Yeah, it's been completely fully remote, aside from the, at most, I might have like one trip down to the office, like quarterly. But yeah, apart from that,
no, well, it's perfect, and it's going to be an interesting take, which is why I thought you were just a great person to have on today, just to kind of have that insight from a fully remote perspective. Like, do you have more meetings than what I would have? Because I'm in Valencia at the minute, but when I was in the UK, I would go in the office. So is your, you know, meeting workload different to mine? And that's what's going to kind of be covered today, which I think is going to be very interesting. Obviously, we've just mentioned you work remotely every day. So from your perspective, what's the difference between a remote meeting that feels productive and one that just kind of feels like that didn't need to be a meeting, you know, like we didn't need that?
Yeah, I think we've all been there sometimes. I think something that's very important to me is when like clear actions and outcomes come from a meeting. Like, if I come away from a meeting and I have a clear list of here's some actions I need to go away, or clear outcomes that have been identified from the meeting, I think that's when it feels quite valuable. I think sometimes mm-hmm. you might come away from a meeting and it's just kind of been, I'm trying to think of a better word than a nothing burger, but you know, it feels as if there was a lot of talking, but actually you didn't get a lot out of it. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think having those clear, concise actionables is a big point for me.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's when you can kind of evaluate like what I was going to get to this like later in the podcast, but we'll bring it forward now. So you have touched on it in terms of, in your opinions, like what is deemed as something that is an important one. So we've got a scrum weekly that stays there. We have the spotlight, which again is like always there. Like these are regular meetings. I'm trying to think of other ones, which I know your one-to-ones, I would say, are quite a good one where a meeting would be needed. Do you have any other ones where it's like that is essential, like we need that because we have those clear outcomes in it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So from an engineering perspective, every morning at the same time, we have what's called the daily stand-up. And I see a lot of discourse online where sort of in my industry, people are like, oh, I hate the stand-up and it's pointless. And I think that's because the stand-up is very easy to run poorly and run it as like a very sluggish status update. Whereas the stand-up, what it should be is a clear, concise, everyone sort of goes through and says, what are they working on? And what are the blockers that are stopping you from getting things done? Mm-hmm. And identifying opportunities to sort of collaborate on something, or, you know, if someone needs help, how can you provide that help? Mm-hmm. And overall, just making sure that you are sticking to the overall sort of vision and goal of what you're trying to do. We call that a sprint. So yeah. I think the daily stand-up update, when it's done well, which we've gotten a lot better at, I think that's a very valuable, 15 minutes to half an hour of the day. I think mm-hmm. as well, another thing is being fully remote. For our team, I think the daily stand-up is one of the only and one of the good sources of sort of team building, because, you know, you all jump in on the morning and you get to have a nice little bit of a natter before you then get into like, all right, focus zone. so I think there is definitely that aspect. The other meeting that comes to mind is we used to do this every 2 weeks, and now we're experimenting with every 3 weeks that we run our sprints.
Okay.
We have a sprint planning session. So mm-hmm. we go through and basically trying to outline what is all the work that we're trying to accomplish over the next 3 weeks. Sort of what can we fit in, how do we break it down, who's the best to look at certain pieces, what might we have issues doing, all that kind of stuff. And that is mm-hmm. another one that I think is very, very important and definitely has benefits to being a live meeting as opposed to over like text or something like that. I think you could do it over text and there's arguments to that, but I also think there's good benefits to keeping it alive.
Mm. Amazing. And I think the takeaway I've got from that is there are some other tools you can use. Like I know Slack is a common communication tool internally, emails obviously, even recordings of demos that you pass on to the team to watch back. But there are some meetings, and all of the ones you've listed there, I don't feel would come across very well or well communicated in that kind of format. So when they've got such a strong purpose, especially for you being remote, it feels like they are the kind of meetings that are definitely essential.
Yeah, that's it. I think, like you mentioned, Slack, you know, that's one we use internally. And as a coming from remote, Slack is like 90, 95% plus time that I'm spending. So, yeah, love Slack.
Yeah, we'd be lost without Slack and all the channels.
100%.
Yeah. And another word that was interesting when you said we're experimenting, how often we're doing those. So can you just talk a little bit more about that? I caught that when you said that. So is it something where you reflect on the meetings and decide how often they're done and the format?
Yeah, sure. So historically, we used to run sprints every sort of bi-weekly. And towards the end of the sprints, we would sort of retrospect and sort of talk about like what works well and what doesn't work well. Mm. And something that we found is a lot of the time when we were running these two weekly sprints, we would come to situations where we would get a lot of the work done to the point that, because generally what we do is we split the work between the classic platform and the newer platform. And that's mm-hmm. sort of a big piece that we're working on at the moment is bridging the gap and moving towards this new platform. And so we okay. might have some developers that work on the old platform, some developers that work on the new platform. And sometimes there can be a discrepancy where a lot of the new platform work gets done before all the old work platform or vice versa. And then people mm-hmm. are sometimes left without things to be doing. And so we just found that it works better for us to work in longer sprints where we sort of account for more things that need to be done. Mm. And it also then reduces the frequency of other meetings, such as the retrospectives or all like the sprint plannings, because we plan more per meeting now because the sprints are longer. And things like the sprint reviews, which gives us more focus time again. So yeah, hopefully that makes yeah. some sense.
No, it did. And I think that's one thing Workcast do very well is reflect on meeting times, essentially. And I think it's a great kind of thing to mention for those who are watching today and kind of have a takeaway point, because I remember, I don't know if you can, but I remember one time we reviewed internally all of our Slack channels. Like, we went through yeah. as a company and was like, do we use this one? Is it needed? No, if it goes. Or could some Slack channels be merged because there's two different conversations going on about yes. very similar things? And I remember we condensed it down like so much. And even just doing a little thing like that just made that whole internal communication we had there feel a lot more calmer. You kind of had less, it was less busy and easier to kind of just jump on and, you know, put in the right channel what you need to say.
Yeah.
And I think as well, another thing that I remember we did in terms of the meeting side is we also had feedback surveys sent out to all of us to ask for our input on the Scrum and the Spotlight meetings. And it was kind of asking our opinions of how often do we enjoy having them, the timing of the day that they are. And it took into consideration a lot of factors because we had people in the US and we yeah. were trying to find that nice place that for everyone it suited. So I feel the ability to do that as a company and actually evaluate what meetings you have and get people's input is just such a really, really good thing to do for everyone, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I think sort of measuring like how well you communicate as a company mm-hmm. Can be very difficult because it's not just like a simple number on a spreadsheet, you know, unlike something like ROI. It's hard to correlate like ROI to things like if I make bad decisions with communication, that lowers employees' like morale and all that stuff. So I think doing these things like pushing out these surveys and collecting the feedback and analyzing that is very important. And I think some companies might not invest as much time into that because it's not an obvious and an immediate. You don't get really any immediate value over like collecting the feedback. You then have to think, what can I implement?
What can I do?
exactly, to mm-hmm. to then, you know, push people towards a more positive light. So yeah, I do value when, because it also just makes you feel valued, right? When, you know, your organization is asking for your feedback and stuff. So I think, yeah, definitely a key one.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. And we definitely reduced. We used to have the Scrum on a Monday and Wednesday, 15 minutes in the morning. And I remember we reduced that down to just once a week. And for me, it did make a very positive difference, because I used to join the Wednesday one and just feel that was 15. I know it's 15 minutes of your day, but lots of people in their jobs and day to day, those 15 minutes are like, what's the word? Like essential, you know, like that's time that you could be putting forward something, you know, actually, like I say worth your time. I sound really mean, but I feel like the two meetings were so similar, so close together, it just was repeated, wasn't it? I remember just sitting there thinking, I've heard this.
No, 100%. I know in sort of my sort of field, we use a term that's called like being in the flow state, where you're sort of like locked in and you are progressing really efficiently through like whatever technical challenges it is. And it's like you say, it's very easy to look at 15 minutes and go, oh, it's only 15 minutes, but it's really not. It's taking you, it's called like context switching, right? It's taking you out of the current context you're in, and it can take a lot longer than just 15 minutes to sort of get back into that zone. So 100%. I think it's very easy to overlook.
Yeah. And do you find, especially with meetings as well, the reason it becomes the default, let's say, is a lot of meetings as well, how do I word this question? Because they've been around for so long, let's say you've got a meeting that's been in your schedule for weekly for years and years, people feel like they can't actually remove that. Do you find that, like, people just feel like that we have to do this, like it's a meeting we've always had, and it, like, it feels forced, and that there are other options, and you don't always have to, like I think we've just touched on there, you can change it, you can change the day, the time, the structure, the format, anything like that, to even just give it a fresh feel as well for people. I think is a really important thing to do too.
Yeah, 100%. I think, and to be honest, I don't think this is just limited to communication. I think it's actually a lot of different areas. Like, I think people can be very averse to change in general. And I kind of touched on this earlier, but especially when it's something that doesn't have immediate benefits or values that you can easily see, like it is hard to measure, like are we doing communication well. And so 100%, I think it's hard, it can be hard to justify making the changes sometimes when there isn't just an easy number that you can point to and say, well, this went up because we did this. So for sure.
Amazing. And I think for me as well, what I found really interesting, because I started working remotely from Valencia the start of June, and I had like a really one of my concerns about coming out was, I remember just thinking, am I going to end up spending my whole day in meetings just because I'm not in the office anymore, and am I going to have meetings all the time to kind of update everyone constantly what I'm doing, because I'm not physically now in the same country. And it sounds really bad, but you know, there is a limit to how many meetings you can probably join, because your work needs to be done at the same time, you know. So I was a bit like, oh god, like how many meetings am I gonna have a day with whoever? But you know what, the reality has been the complete opposite. My meeting schedule hasn't changed at all. It's remained the exact same as when I was in the UK. A lot of my day-to-day communication with my manager is done just via Slack, to be fair. And we also have a shared like to-do list. So on a glance, if she was curious to see what I'm doing on this particular day, you know, she can just go in on that to-do sheet. And that's how we've communicated without actually physically needing to jump on a call all the time and talk it through. So I feel like that's been a nice way to do it as well.
Yeah, I think sort of just to touch on the back of that, because So the prior job I did before this one wasn't fully remote, and I find micromanagement is a lot more rampant in like non-remote settings. I think when you are remote, it does make you think about alternatives to tracking progress, like you mentioned with like the shared to-do list, rather than, you know, like a constant watchful eye over the shoulder or constant meetings and check-ins. I do think there are some challenges with sort of like, you know, the asynchronous communication of using something like Slack that you do need to be aware of. Have you ever heard of, I don't know if I'm jumping too far here, but have you ever heard of like no hello?
Oh, no. Oh, tell me more.
No. So this was a, I don't know if movement is the right word, but it definitely gained popular around sort of the COVID area where essentially, so one of the things that I do in my day to day, if I'm stuck on like an issue, for example, one of the things I'll do is I'll like check documentation, and that's a whole other side thing we can go into. But then my next step is to sort of like send a Slack message to the person who I think might be most appropriate to help me with the issue. And it used to be very common, and I get why people do this, because for example, if you're talking to someone on the phone, you might, you tend to be very polite. So you might say like hello or hi, and then like wait for a response and then actually get into your problem, stuff like that. And I think it can be very easy for people sometimes to just send a Slack message and say like hi, like are you there, question mark, and then like wait for a response and then say well, this is actually what I need help with. And so no hello is all about just beginning your messages with like, and actually getting into what the issue is, rather than, and sort of sidestepping the whole politeness of like hello and like waiting for a response, because you're actually so you're actually it feels like you're wasting like both of your time when you're not allowing the other person to sort of think about the problem immediately, because what you're doing is you're making the other person read your greeting and then type back to you and then wait for you to type out your question or whatever it is, and then they can start thinking about the issue and get back to you. So yeah, that effective asynchronous communication I think is all about learning how to succinctly describe your problem and just start off your messages with that, and let people immediately start thinking about what you're actually asking them and then get back to you in their own time.
I need to start doing that, because I am 100% guilty for saying hi and then just waiting. And then
exactly, yeah.
And yeah, I'm guilty.
And you know what? Because it's like, that's like a totally human thing that we've done over the years, over like the phone and stuff like that. But I think as we sort of move into the age of using like chat applications like Slack and working remotely, I think it helps people be a lot more productive if you are more straight to the point. And that's what no hello is all about.
Right. Well, I'm definitely taking tips then, because I definitely but you know, I think it's my communication style though that I need to work on, I think, because sometimes if I send a message like hi and then that, I get worried that I like appear rude and I'm like, you know, like
it's all about being polite, isn't it? And it's totally understandable, but it's just one of those shifts that I think as you start to work remotely, it's just one of those shifts.
Yeah, very interesting. I like that. And I like what you've mentioned as well. Instead of just being like, fancy a call or can you jump on a call? You've just mentioned there about how you look at the documentation. This is a suggestion as well, to look at the documentation first and then send your message. And if you're really not able to get the help after then it's your time to go on the call as well. But I do think when you jump on a call, even spontaneously, it can definitely take up way much more time, because as you mentioned there, you do engage in a semi conversation initially just to kind of, you know, hello, how was your weekend? And then time's gone. So yeah, that's a very interesting way to kind of do it.
Yeah. And I think that highlights, we sort of jump to documentation. I think, it's definitely one of the things I try and do first, because I always feel, you know, guilty if I have to, I feel like I'm pulling away someone from their work by asking, can we jump on a call and can we spend some time and work through this? And I think when you have that culture of, oh, we always just go on spontaneous calls, it then allows you to get lazy around things like documentation. And I think that's a really bad habit, because what if there's no one around to help you at some point, like the person who worked on that system is away for whatever reason or something, and there's no documentation in place. What do you do, right? You don't have. So I think having, you know, up to date and good documentation is a very important key piece. That I think that's a very good thing that remote teams do. Is it, you know, it exposes where there's bad documentation. And once, you know, if I have a long call with someone, I've had to walk them through something, I'm always like, okay, I need to go back and make sure the documentation is nice and up to date. And so when anyone in the future runs into this problem, they can just find it super quickly, and we can reduce wasted productivity, basically.
Yeah, and I think that's the goal. It's not less communication. It's just finding ways to keep people informed or get people's help without interrupting them like every hour or like too intensely, where they can still just a little message on the side help you out, but they're like still in the zone. So I think, yeah, it's just finding a way to do that successfully for everyone is a huge thing to try.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. 100%.
So we definitely, I would say, from what we've discussed so far, we're not saying meetings are bad. There are definitely meetings that are way better to be done in that live meeting format rather than on a Slack channel or an email. But which conversations genuinely kind of benefit from everyone being together? So is there, like, I feel like you've touched on it already, maybe the one you mentioned previously, but a meeting that you would just never replace. If it went out, your days would just be like, whoa.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the sort of sprint planning that I mentioned, where we get together and we figure out what needs to be done for the next sprint duration, I think that is one that I would say the benefits of being live outweigh the cons, because I think when you're in that live environment, I think it promotes like giving like immediate feedback, which is very useful, especially when you're still in like the design phase, or like you might be showing off like mock-ups or that kind of thing. It's very useful to get the feedback like as early as possible in the chain, you know, before people end up and start building things that need to be changed. So I think that immediate feedback piece is important. I also think that, and this is a piece that's very specific, I think, to engineering and this meeting that we run, but a very important part of our sprint planning is to, when we come up with the work that needs to be done, what we do is we like point it, we score it based on how complex we think it is. And the way that we do that is everyone privately does their vote, and then we share it like at the same time to compare votes. Whereas I think if you did that in text, it would be much more difficult to do that privately and not run into anchor bias. Because I think what happens is, I've seen this happen, and I've been guilty of this as a junior developer, but let's say I'm a junior developer and we're discussing something and I don't quite understand it. I think it's very human and very easy to fall into the trap of, I don't want to look stupid, so I'm just going to nod and smile and not ask any questions. And
as I'm nodding and smiling.
And I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah. But it's very easy to fall into the trap of not highlighting that you need help. And then if your peers are like scoring work, it's easy just to like copy their score. And if you're doing it live, it's much more difficult to copy other people's scores because you're like doing it in real time. And I think preserving that is like a really sort of key point, because the whole point is that, you know, no one's stupid for asking questions. And it's important to know that like everyone is on the same wavelength and believes that the work is like around the same complexity, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So they're the means that you feel. I completely agree with what you're saying. For me, one that I would really struggle with if it wasn't a meeting is one-to-ones, monthly one-to-ones. Like I have monthly one-to-ones, and I feel typically in a one-to-one, you know, they're positive. It's always a positive meeting because I'm the best, obviously. No, I'm joking.
never doubt with it.
No, but if you had like any feedback, I do better to talk about feedback or talk about maybe blockers, whatever it is, with body language. If I see it wrote down on a message, sometimes I could overanalyze that way more than I need to. If someone just told me it and I can see they're kind of like, yeah, you know, like this is going great, we just need to work on X, Y, Z. I interpretate that better than if it was in a message, because I would just be like, oh no. Like, I've done this.
No, I get what you're saying. It can come across as a lot more like colder in text, and you're missing, you know, like you say, those body language cues and, you know, even just little like expressions in the voice and stuff. So, yeah, I do agree. I think challenging conversations definitely can be better done face to face.
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay, so I'm conscious of time, so I'll just kind of I just wanted to touch on remote working, because we're both doing it right now, and sometimes it's the remote working that often gets blamed for communication. I know it's quite common for them to be like, oh, they work remote, so you barely must, you know, it must be so difficult to work with them, or, you know.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? I'm someone who works remotely.
No, funnily enough, I'm totally not biased as a remote worker, but I do not think that remote working is the issue. I think something that could be said is remote working might expose some previously bad communication habits, like the lack of documentation that you might otherwise, I don't know if cheat is the right word, but you might just sort of get by without fixing the real issue. Working, yeah, you kind of push to. And I also just think, you know, remote working has so many advantages that you really can't replicate. Like, at least I feel this way, I don't know about you, but I feel like I have a lot more autonomy, and I feel a lot more trusted. Not having that constant micromanagement and the flexibility to go about my day. Another thing is, I feel like, what was I going to say? I feel like, I've totally lost it.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, live blank. Which, you know, I'm like, this is a great example, because this sort of thing wouldn't happen in asynchronous communication. No, okay. So what I was going to say is, another thing is, when you do good sort of remote working, you and sort of make it work for people in different time zones, suddenly you're really widening the net of, like, you know, who you can hire and support and who can join your teams, because you're supporting, you know, a much broader range of time zones and people.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. And I think I'm sure you'd agree as well that, like, the meetings that you do have just become more intentional when you're remote. Yes. Like, it's just more intentional. It's kind of like, oh, does this really need to be a call, or does this really need to be a meeting? And I just think it makes it, like, people think a little bit more. And as I mentioned previously, when I first came out to Valencia, I did think, like, oh, it'd be interesting to see how much my communications change from what it currently is to what it's like remote. And like I said before, there's no change. Like, everything is exactly the same. And, you know, my work is still getting done to a high standard. The deadlines are still being met. Like, I still have campaigns going out left, right, and center. So in terms of, like, the actual work, just because I've changed location hasn't even had an impact on my actual job role and the work that's needed to be done. And the communication is just as good as ever. Like, there's the same meetings going in and going out, so For me, I don't find there's a barrier there, depending on where your location is. But I know it's easier said than done. There are certain roles where remote isn't an option, obviously, and, you know, it's more difficult.
Yeah, of course. And I think, you know, it is important for you to remember that, you know, remote work really is just like a tool. Like, yeah, it might not work for some, or some people might abuse it. And we're not saying that doesn't happen, but it's important to remember to not judge everyone under remote working. And I think sometimes as well, it's easy to get very rigid with sort of certain policies and the ways that you do things. For example, like if you're working with like Scrum, and I think it's important for organizations to be mindful of like what's best for your team and be willing to make changes, even if it does go against the grain.
Yeah, no, I think that's super important. And I think that's one huge, huge key takeaway to definitely take away from it in terms of, you know, reviewing what you do have. Is there anything that you could reduce, you could change? Can you get your employees' feedback and get their opinions and alter it to like what their preferences would be as well, to make them feel seen and heard and have their opinions like matter? I think that's the biggest one. And from our examples of when we eliminated so many Slack channels, goodness gracious, I think like many were slashed because they're just not needed. And yeah, I think you get stuck sometimes where it just feels like a bit of a chore, or there's too much to even start to look through, so it just gets left. And I think that's where the barrier really is that kind of style, not anything else.
Yeah, I think it, you know, pushes you into potentially uncertain situations. It makes you ask the questions like, is this meeting actually still needed, that you probably wouldn't be asking the question if you hadn't attempted to go remote.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love all this. I feel like we've spoke about a lot of good things there. I love it when that happens. I'm like, when the podcast first starts, I'm like, oh God, I hope this goes well, but it's perfect. I feel like everything we've mentioned is really good. I would say one final question from me to you is, if someone listening today goes back to work tomorrow, ready for this, what's one communication habit that you'd encourage them to like rethink?
I think it's definitely the no hello that I mentioned. For all for the reasons that I previously mentioned, like I think it greatly increases productivity. Another thing that I didn't touch on that I think is also really helpful is, I think being forced to succinctly sort of describe your problem to someone else over text, as you're sort of like typing through and thinking about the problem, it makes you actually think about the problem. I don't know if you've heard of like rubber duck debugging, but it's like a similar thing where being forced to go over the problem and type about it really helps for you to suddenly realize, oh, hang on a minute, what I'm actually typing and what's actually happening doesn't link up. So that's where the issue is. But yeah, so I always find it immensely helpful that when I sort of think through how do I word my problem in a way that someone else can understand easily.
Understand easy, yeah.
That then helps me to understand it easier as well, is what I'm trying to say.
No, that's really good. Do you know what? This is even like techniques that you have for like people who may be listening, going through an onboarding process. Like this is like, that's super helpful for like way more than just if you want another meeting or not.
Yeah,
I think that's
100%.
Really good advice. Yeah, that's really good. I can't really top that.
Well, you don't have to. We can just leave it there.
Yeah, I think you've won that one. That was really good. I was just going to say, like, what's one thing that I would recommend them to change? encourage them to rethink. Sorry, I would say what we've touched on about reviewing what you've already got and making sure they're still needed, or they might be a bit outdated and do they need a refresh. I think that's it. That's mine. But you've topped mine because we've already talked about that and you haven't, so you win.
Thank you very much.
So I feel like that's all we've got time for, because, like, ironically, and I'm not even joking, in 10 minutes I've got a meeting. So I feel like
you could have seen that coming.
No, for real, yeah, I checked my calendar. So I will wrap it up there, but honestly, thank you so, so much for joining today. I feel like your input, especially having the remote experience and seeing how you find meetings and everything like that, just being really, really insightful. So thank you so much for your time. I'm definitely getting you on another one. You have.
Oh God, I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, you're coming on another one soon. So.
No, great. Yeah, it was interesting to hear, you know, our different perspectives and also like what we agreed on and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I feel like I learned something as well.
Did you? Oh, well, that's great. I'm glad you did. Perfect. And for those who are watching, this will be made available on demand as soon as it's finished being live today. So you're able to watch that back. You can share it on to anyone who you might find will find it useful. And we will be back very, very soon with another Unfiltered podcast. So we will see you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.